Do you think I should start like dyeing my beard?
No.
Like what color?
Your hair color, but thank
well,
you.
Well, it went from blonde to dirty blonde to a little bit brown to non-existent. Mm. And now if it grows out at all, it's like gray. This could be a podcast.
Coming at you from the Carbon County Cocktail Lounge, we have another episode of Talking with Doyle with State Representative Doyle Heffley. As always, we're joined by the indomitable Hunter Kipe, and today we're joined by special guest Mike Heckman. Doyle, what are we talking about today?
Today we are talking about a hot topic that was really brought to light over some of the issues that are going on in Texas right now, but it is something that we've dealt with here quite a bit in the state, redistricting, gerrymandering, and all that goes along with it. So as we know, every 10 years, the nation takes a census, and that's something that's in the Constitution our founding fathers put in place, mm-hmm. to take a census every 10 years so they can then set aside the legislative districts, senatorial districts throughout the nation, but also in our Commonwealth. And the number one focus is one person, one vote, right? So the population, so if you have, like, for example, a state house district that I represent has to be approximately 65,000 people. I don't know what is in a congressional district right now, but each one of those districts are drawn up, right? So in Pennsylvania, we have the redistricting commission, which then sets up the legislative districts for the House and the Senate. And the congressional districts are to be designed by statute, right? It's a law that's proposed in the House, passes in the Senate, and signed by the governor and upheld. So on today's show, we want to talk a little bit about how sometimes that process can go a little squirrely and how over-involvement with the PA courts has really messed up our state. And then just talk a little bit about how that parallels with what's going on in Texas. But I wanted to bring in an expert. Mm-hmm. Hunter, did we bring in a true expert?
We did. There's definitely things that we're going to cover today that you and I won't be able to do on our own. So, Mike, do you just want to talk about your brief time and experience with redistricting, but also why it's important now and why it's a hot topic?
Absolutely. So my name is Mike Heckman. I'm the executive director of the State Government Committee for the House Republican Caucus. The State Government Committee has legislative oversight over the concept of redistricting as a process. When there's a redistricting reform proposal, we are the staff that manage that. And we also each 10 years, that is the committee that does the redistricting for congressional districts, not for the state legislative districts. That is, as Doyle mentioned, that is a separate process with the Legislative Reapportionment Commission, which is a one-time body constituted each decade. My personal background in this subject, I studied the subject a fair amount in law school, and then it was the first ever bill that I staffed in this legislature was in 2018. There was a discharge resolution on a Democratic redistricting reform bill, and the state government chairman at the time asked who had experience with redistricting, and I did. So I staffed that bill through a little bit of a chaotic committee, and there were 500 amendments filed to it on second. And then I was on the state government committee again for the 2021 session with the redistricting for congressional seats, which at the time, Chairman Seth Grove of the committee did some statewide hearings, mm-hmm. So assisted in staffing that as well. And it's just a personal interest of mine, so I have a lot of enthusiasm about the subject. So,
and we were walking through the halls at the Ryan office building, and I was talking a little bit to Mike, and we were talking about redistricting, mm-hmm. and he really amazed me by his insight and knowledge into it. Mm-hmm. So for this episode, I think we'll talk a little bit about the redistricting commission, what happened in 2021, 2020, with how that redistricting was done. Just as a little backdrop, the first time when I came into session, 2010, the census was taken, in 2011, 2012, we redrew the congressional maps and the state house maps. Mm-hmm. And I actually voted against those congressional maps that year. because they didn't represent my district very well, how it was redrawn. I didn't think it was a focus. And that's one of the things, as a legislator, the voting process is really important for the congressional, U.S. congressional maps, because you get a say in that, right? So the people that I represent, I don't think we're going to be well represented because it carved my district in half, Carbon County in half. And I voted against that, and I got, you know, the folks back home really agreed with me on voting against that. So that's why I think it's important that we keep that a legislative process so that there's some transparency. Mm-hmm. But with that said, what I really wanted to focus on, this goes back to when those maps were drawn, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court then was was a change of the makeup of the court in 2015. And then in 2015, the courts really overstepped their bounds and redrew the congressional maps for the state of Pennsylvania. I don't know if you want to elaborate on that a little bit.
Sure. So it's interesting because on the state level here, we've experienced kind of a two-track process here. The federal courts, right around the same time, were removing themselves from considering political gerrymandering claims. So Rucho v. Common Cause was a Supreme Court decision in 2019 where the Supreme Court said basically, do not bring claims of political gerrymandering to the federal courts. We cannot rule on them. They're non-justiciable. There are other ways to get a map into the federal courts, but the claim that this map was unfairly drawn from a political party standpoint is not a claim you can really make in federal court anymore. Now, just 1 year before that, we saw the opposite at the state level in Pennsylvania. The state Supreme Court said for the first time that the Pennsylvania Constitution and its Free and Fair Elections Clause provides a guardrail and a claim in Pennsylvania court that a map is just unfair in a political sense, Republican versus Democrat. And so, you know, these are claims that no longer can go into a federal court. They are claims that the Supreme Court here has shown that they're willing to not only consider, but they struck down in 2018, mm-hmm. the then congressional map, enacted their own.
And that's where I think the big issue is, right? So the fact that they struck it down, right? So they do have oversight, right? So mm-hmm. if they felt that it didn't follow the Pennsylvania Constitution, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court can do that. However, when they struck it down, they then had hired somebody from Stanford University in California mm-hmm. who redrew the maps, and they imposed their own map, which, I mean, it's one thing if they strike it down, but mm-hmm. then it should go back to the legislature, and the legislature between the House and the Senate and the governor's office negotiate a map and then pass it and sign it into law, not to redraw the map. And that's where I take great issue with our Pennsylvania Supreme Court.
Right. And the timing there was very unusual. They struck the old map down in January. They provided the order that said we're striking the map down, but they didn't provide the decision itself for a number of additional weeks where you would have been able to see as a map drawer, why did they strike it down? What were the justifications? What do we have to avoid doing in this new map? They didn't provide that for almost another month. And then the timeline was such that it was February of a congressional election year. So these maps basically, I think the General Assembly would have had in the matter of weeks to come up with a map from scratch from when they got the actual logic and order or the opinion of the court of how they should avoid drawing a map or what they need to do.
And we've seen that with the courts on other issues. So they did that. So they, you know, the timing there was mm-hmm. suspect. And we've seen the same issue with the election code when they rewrote the election code going into the 2020 election, which just really upheavaled the voting rights. But we're not going to get into that right now, but that is a separate episode. Yeah. So fast forward as to why these things have implications for the Commonwealth, and you look at now we are in the midst of a budget impasse once again. Mm-hmm. We have a divided 102-101 House, right? We have a divided government, and really what you have is through the redistricting, how it was done this last time, packing of districts where you have very, very hard right districts, very, very mm-hmm. hard left districts. Now, myself, I would say my district really has not changed. For a time, the population had gone up. We lost one borough. That borough is now back. My legislative district, the 122nd, the county line is a district line. And I believe it is the only district in the Commonwealth where the in the state house where the county lines, there's one representative for the whole county. There is other districts that members have one whole county, but they also have maybe half of another county. Mm-hmm. So it is unique, and I really enjoy that. But my district has not changed geographically in that time frame. But if we could just recap a little bit, because there's several pieces of legislation right now, some of them bipartisan, some of them not. We've gotten a lot of inquiries into my office about sponsoring redistricting reform in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. So talk a little bit about what happened, how we got to where we're at.
Yeah, so as I mentioned, or as you mentioned as well, there are two different redistricting processes in the state here. The congressional redistricting happens as an act of law. It's passed by the House and Senate, signed by the governor. Now, again, with the court's influence, we did not agree to a map in 2021. And so they enacted a map themselves. That's the maps that are currently in place for Congress. In this building, it's a whole different world for redistricting. It's the Legislative Reapportionment Commission. That's established in the Pennsylvania Constitution. And that comprises the four caucus leaders of the General Assembly and a fifth member that they either appoint or the Supreme Court appoints if those four can't agree to it. Now, my understanding, they've never agreed to it, so the court has always appointed that fifth person. And so when that process happened in 2020, I would say it was a very different process than it had been in the past. There was a very large shift in the House map in particular, which was of a type that you wouldn't have seen that level of change in prior years. And if you look at the Legislative Reapportionment Commission's statement on their final map, the chairman, Mark Nordenberg, issued a long report of sort of his motivations and what he thought was good about the map, what was bad. There's a lot of information in there about what their priorities were. And that's what I always think about with redistricting is, and there you have to have priorities in redistricting. There's always choice to be made. There are trade-offs. Do we keep this county whole, or do we cross this mountain range, or do we split this school district? There's no way to neatly divide a pretty messy state.
And historically, the how redistricting has been done, they tried to keep, they all have to be contiguous, right? I mean, they're conjoined. You can't have a pocket over here and then another pocket over here and be the same district. So they have to be contiguous, and they try not to split municipalities or cities. Now, Philadelphia is a little bit different because obviously it's a much more populated area, but they try to limit the amount of splits in those municipalities.
So what the Constitution says is districts must be compact, contiguous, and whenever necessary, avoid splitting a municipality. Now, I would say what's changed in recent years and what you heard the Legislative Reapportionment Commission of 2021 speak about a lot is an additional criteria that isn't found in the Constitution, that's something that a lot of advocates have pushed for, which is proportionality. Now, there are proportional democracies in the world. There are democracies where people vote, and the percentage of votes that a party gets or the percentage of seats that they get in the parliament. We don't have a proportional democracy, and our democracy is designed actually not to be proportional. Mm-hmm. If you win 50% of the votes plus one, you get the whole seat. Mm-hmm. And the people who got 49% of the votes get no seats out of that. And so anytime you do district-based representation, you're not going to have proportional outcomes unless you really push the system to get them. And what I think a lot of the outcomes of the 2021 reapportionment process on the state house level was that it was very motivated by proportionality rather than by the actual constitutional criteria we have, which are compactness and contiguity and avoiding splitting communities. So what I usually point people to are a lot of the mid-sized cities in the state that don't need to be split. We're sitting in one right now. Harrisburg would make pretty much almost a whole district on its own. Mm-hmm. And instead it's split into three. Reading is split into multiple districts. It doesn't need to be. Lancaster is split into multiple districts. It doesn't need to be. But those things are necessary if what you are prioritizing is who sits in the majority in the state house, if you want to give both parties a shot at the majority.
And that's really why I think there needs to be some redistricting. I think we need to look at how do we change it, because the system primarily had worked, right? But now you have folks that aren't following the constitutional guidelines as they swore to. We have an unelected official, Chancellor Nordenberg, who came in and pretty much rewrote and redrew his map to his liking, right? Mm-hmm. Chancellor from the University of Pittsburgh, came in with a very progressive ideology and really uprooted. I mean, right now we don't have a budget. We haven't had a budget passed on time since these new maps have been drawn. Mm-hmm. And I think that speaks volumes. We have a divided government that really is dysfunctional, and everybody's like, what happened? And it really comes down to what happened in this redistricting process as I see it, and why do we need legislation to maybe change that? But so what they really did was they came in and they carved up areas so they would pull, you know, a 50% or a 52% majority of one voting block, and then looped in, you know, more rural or suburban or urban or suburban or rural areas into that, so they're kind of underrepresented. And you just don't have that contiguous, that compactness, so that when people come here, you know, when I'm working here, I'm working for the people that elected me, mm-hmm. and for the entirety of the state, but I'm the representative from Carbon County. Right. We don't have that in many districts. People mm-hmm. feel like they're not represented. And just the historic combining of districts, you know, and really what got us to where we're at. I don't know if you could elaborate on that.
Sure.
A little bit.
So what you saw in practice really was a large reduction in the number of districts that could swing one way or another, mm-hmm. and a large increase in what would be safe districts for either party. And I would point to the last two election cycles as being an interesting, probably historically unique example of that. In the 2022 election, the top of the ticket in Pennsylvania was a 15-point win for Democratic Governor Josh Shapiro. And in the 2024 election, the top of the ticket was a 3-point win for Republican President Trump at the top of the ticket. And not a single state House seat changed in those two. So mm-hmm. the state House that was elected in 2022, not only did it net to the same, in many elections, you might net the same number of seats, but in every single seat, the incumbent won, or the retiring incumbent, their successor of their same party, won mm-hmm. in the past election. And so there are still swing seats left, but in order to pursue proportionality, they had to eliminate a lot of those swing seats. And that is something that I often discuss in the redistricting reform proposal, because you need to choose a priority. Your priority can be communities and keeping communities whole and keeping the representation of communities something that makes sense. Or your priority can be proportionality and who sits in the majority in Harrisburg. But with our political geography, those two priorities are pretty incompatible.
Yeah. And really, when you had the Speaker of the House, the now Speaker of the House, at a press forum, say, going into the redistricting, and she was one on that commission because she was a leader of the Democratic caucus at the time, mm-hmm. that when asked how will the Democrats take back the majority, she said, through redistricting. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't about it wasn't about ideas, it wasn't about, you know, working for the people, it was about gerrymandering. And really, mm-hmm. what I've referred to it several times as the gerrymandered majority that we have right now in the state mm-hmm. House by one vote. And they like to say a humble majority. No, it's kind of mm-hmm. tyrannical at times, but it is. But unfortunately, if you go back to 2022, the top of the ticket, Josh Shapiro won by 15 points, right? It was pretty much a landslide. Mm-hmm. Yet, if you look down at the numbers and you really dive into it, and this is where you see what's going on in our state is 450,000 more voters that cycle. When they came out to cast their ballot, they voted at top of the ticket, but on their down ballot, when they voted for who was going to represent them, 450,000 more people voted for the Republican candidate than a Democratic mm-hmm. candidate. But yet, the majority had swung the other way by one vote. And that just shows you that packing the districts, mm-hmm. with putting all Republicans and all Democrats in these tightly bundled districts and taking away those swing districts really took away the voice of many Pennsylvanians. And that's what's so unjust about the current districts in the state House.
Mm-hmm. And there are connections there, I think, as well to what's being discussed in Texas and what President Trump has discussed a lot in recent years, which is the, you know, the one person, one vote standard. And that's maybe a separate conversation. We could go into that. That is relatively new. That's from the 60s. Prior mm-hmm. to that, it was quite common for there to be large discrepancies in legislative districts. In a lot of states, the Senate was one seat per county, where, you know, that would not be allowed today. But something that's changed since the 60s and 70s, when that standard emerged, is that now we have a very large number of non-citizen residents in the country, and as well mm-hmm. as illegal residents. And there are district discrepancies that are very large between some districts in their citizen voting age population, the people who are actually able to vote, and their total population. And so I did some analysis of our state house map. And so you said in 2022, the Republicans in the state received over 400,000 more votes than Democrats at the state house level. Well, one cause of that is that the citizen voting age population in districts represented by Republicans is 300,000 people larger than the citizen voting age population represented by Democrats in the state house. So the average Republican in the state house represents over 50,000 citizens of voting age, and the average Democrat represents 47,000. Mm-hmm. The smallest of those districts for citizen voting age population has just 33,400 citizens of voting age, where the largest has 55,000. And you're on the upper end of that. I looked. You're 52,200 citizens of voting age.
Very so, nice.
You know, when you talk about one person, one vote,
and Hunter is one of them.
Right. I am. One of them.
Oh, you are.
I am.
That's a bit of a drive. So yeah, if you look at one person, one vote, there are people voting in a district for one seat in the House, and there are only another 33,000 citizens there who are eligible to vote. Where in some districts there are another 55,000 eligible to vote, and across the state, 300,000 people is five House seats.
Yeah.
Which it would be a large difference.
I mean, some of these House seats swung on just a handful of votes. I think, was it 20, 22 or was it 4? It was, I think it was 44 votes swung the majority.
Right.
And it really goes to show that just the other thing that I think was we need to address legislatively is what they did is combining. So there were, I think at that time, 110 Republican members going into it, and they combined so many districts where they actually went out of the way to loop in the districts to combine two Republican members. Right. So they have to run against each other. And I don't know if you elaborate what is.
Yeah. So I did some analysis at the time as well. It was something that the Legislative Reapportionment Commission themselves characterized as that being a response to shrinking and growing population. But in reality, I think it was 5 of the 10 fastest shrinking districts were in Democratic held seats in some of the cities, particularly in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. If you look at the city of Pittsburgh, it has 9 representatives that represent part of the city. It has just barely 300,000 people, which isn't even 5 full seats. But instead of, letting that city's representation kind of shrink as its population as a share of the state has shrank very substantially since the 70s, instead, they've kept all 9 districts in part in the city, and they've drawn them out into the suburbs and have turned what would have been swing seats into blue seats. And we did have, in Allegheny County in the Pittsburgh area, we not only had, multiple Republicans drawn into one race against each other, but we also had multiple Republicans who were drawn into very blue seats. Their residences were kind of...
Yeah, they pretty much took their whole district. They moved them into an area that they never represented before.
Right. And that's something that it's hard to look at all of those choices made on a systematic basis, along with the citizen voting age discrepancy, and then even just the population discrepancy. At congressional districts, we even out to basically one person difference. Mm-hmm. So that they're perfectly even in most states.
Those are U.S. congressional
U.S.
districts.
Congressional districts. That's generally been viewed as the federal court's desire that they make them true neutral population equivalent. The state level, it's a little more flexible. So there's an allowable range. You don't all have to have exactly 65,200 and whatever the number is. But if you look at all the Democratic-leaning seats and all the Republican-leaning seats when the LRC drew that map, the Democratic-leaning seats had a collective shortfall of over 50,000 residents. And the Republican-leaning seats had a collective overage of over 50,000 residents. So that's more than that's a House seat and a half.
And that really speaks volumes to how wrong this process was and what they did here. Government relies, our democracy, our representative democracy, relies on people, relies on courts to be impartial, relies on redistricting commissions like this. Mm-hmm. And there's always going to be some politics in it. But at the end of the day, Nornberg failed, in my opinion, because he didn't do the job that he was supposed to do. He wasn't working for the party. He was working for the people. And those 50,000 people under and those 50,000 plus, that's, they lost their voice in their representative republic because we had people who put ideology and wanting an outcome ahead of the people that vote to cast, to get elected officials to represent them in here in Harrisburg. Mm-hmm. And because of that, to this day, we don't have a budget. We've had cycle after, you know, every budget since then has been late, right? We have issues with mass transit, funding. We have just, you know, the gauntlet of issues because of this. And I think it's directly related, and it's why we need to somehow reform the system. But, you know, reforming the system is one thing, but, you know, you're still going to have reliable people, and it's up to the voices of the people to address that issue. Those discrepancies are large. And just talk about how many members were pitted against each other is insane. It's mm-hmm. never been done before.
Right. And there were even more specific, I would say, you know, concerns there. If for all members of the House, and you were, I think, one of the few that didn't experience this, they really scrambled the districts in a way that hadn't been done before. So it weakened the incumbency strengths that people have represented an area for decades. They got all new constituents in many cases. But they did that statistically. They did it on a very uneven level for Republican incumbents and Democratic incumbents. So if you look at just competitive districts, Democratic competitive incumbents in the 2021 period, they had 73% of their old constituents making up their new district. The competitive Republican incumbents only had 57%. Of their incumbents in their new district were the same as their old one. And you know, when you look at those changes across the course of a couple dozen different seats, it's hard to think that they're not intentional. Mm.
Yeah, and I tell you, this conversation could go on forever because it really is, it's kind of mind-boggling when you look at how that process worked mm-hmm. and where we're at now because of it. And we're going to continue. We'll probably have some more conversations on this as we work on different legislative reforms to try to address that. But Mike, thank you so much for
Absolutely.
Coming in. Hunter, anything to wrap up?
No, I don't think so.
All right. Well, thank you for your time and energy. And thank everybody for tuning in to this edition of Talking with Doyle.